Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
World, it's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey. Can't hear anything in my headphones. Hold up, back again.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good now. Episode 43, the Jack Sigma episode / Kendrick Perkins episode. Here as usual, my boy Abe Schwadron. And Abe, what is good, sir?
Yo, aka Abraham Lincoln Bio, back ready to roll. Big week this week.
Yeah, I mean, yo, we were off last week. Your bands was out of town. Had to take a little trip, work-related trip, which we'll hear more about in a later episode. But, you know, it feels good to be back. Had Pizza Hut up here yesterday.
Oh,
my
yeah.
My man rocked the Pizza Hut.
Kind of still smells like pizza in here, honestly.
I feel like that the Pizza Hut
the pie tops
doesn't go away for a minute. But, yeah, you rocked the pie tops.
The
got
pie
some
frieza
out of it. So I'm happy for you.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, no problem, man. But, you know, blessed today. Have a very special guest. You know, the ACC tournament and Big East tournament are both in New York this week. So we had to fire off the DMs and get assistant strength coach Eric Diefendorf from Syracuse in here. Eric, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah.
First time up in the office, so pretty excited, man. It's cool.
Yeah, so the last time we had you on, it's probably about like a year ago this time, and, you know, you were having lunch. Where was it? New Zealand?
In New Zealand, right
the
on
beach?
The beach.
Why the hell did you come back, man?
Man, it's all about the fam, man. Hopefully, when basketball is all said and done and the kids are doing their own thing, then I can get back to New Zealand or Australia. Because I tell you what, if you haven't been there, you got to check it out. It's something else, man. So it's something else.
No, obviously, we have you here. We want to talk a lot of ACC tournament stuff, some more college basketball stuff because you're coaching this year. But before we get into that, you know, obviously you're a former Slam High School diary, you know, keeper for the mag. We just pulled out an old ABCD photo of you you were telling us about. So give us that little story about just being at camp and what you remember from that photo.
Oh, man, I remember going 2 years. My first year was with Dwight Howard, J.R. Smith, Sebastian Telfair, Darius Washington, Sean Livingston. Who else? Man, it was the year when they had eight guys go to the Josh Smith. So just, you know, coming from a small city in Michigan and then seeing all these guys and being able to compete with them was awesome. And then the next year, it was like O.J. Mayo, Greg Oden, Derek Character, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, good young guys. So, again, just to come.
Derek Character.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
From Jersey, right?
He's from Jersey. Yeah. You know what? He was the man, like,
yeah,
since
I
eighth
remember.
Grade. And, I mean, he was, like, the number one guy. But you know how that is. I don't know. But he's probably out here still trying to, you know.
He's probably hooping
yeah,
somewhere.
Still yeah, still trying to grind yeah. it out. So, but yeah, man, that ABCD camp, those experiences, unbelievable, man. I'll never forget those. Those were some of the, you know, the best games, best competition in the summertime. And you know, that's where we made our name at, I think. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, but they announced that you were keeping a diary for Slam, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they, I forget who it was announced it, but I was sitting in the back and then they were just talking about, you know, former, I think, matter of fact, they were talking about when Tracy McGrady or Ray Allen dunked on Tracy McGrady, and they had a pick in the Slam, and then they started getting to the diary keeper this year. I was sitting in the back, and they said, "Oh yeah, matter of fact, he's sitting right here in the back." And then everybody turned around, and was like, "Who?" So I'm just kind of like, you know what I mean, put it down because I'm not, you know, I'm a humble guy, but yeah. So I got the target on my back automatically. Right, the first game we go back, oh, here he go, right there, he is. But no, man, it was all in good fun, and you know, it just made the you know, the competitive nature that much better. So it was fun, man, definitely.
So yeah, being that we're back in New York, you know, a place where you had many a great game with Syracuse at the Garden, and you know, I'm sure you haven't been asked this question enough times, but you know, how did the, you know, does being here like bring back memories of obviously the six overtime game, but also like just memories of great Big East tournaments that passed, and like you start thinking about like your old teammates and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of my best teammates I played with, Jerry McNamara. He's assistant coach on Syracuse right now. So we always have memories and talk when we're in the office about past games. My first year with him, we had the Big East run, the four games in 4 days, mm-hmm. and where he played incredible and made some unbelievable shots. So I remember that, and then obviously the 6 OT game, standing up on the table, it didn't count. Go back to the benches, it didn't count. Let's do it again. Six more overtimes, and it's pretty incredible just to even play in the Garden and on ESPN. In front of crowds like that, our Cuse fans, we're selling it out. Like tomorrow, it'll mm-hmm. be sold out.
Yeah.
It'll be sold out, and so it's pretty grateful to be able to even just come through here and play and share that floor with all the legends that played. So super grateful.
So now that you're obviously on the coaching staff, mm-hmm. I'm curious, because many people would probably point to that game as sort of one of the most iconic games of your career. Mm-hmm. So what do the kids on the team now know you as? What's the first thing they say to you when they meet you? Like, is that what they remember? Do they just remember more generally sort of your career? Maybe even the ABCD stuff, being in SLAM. Like, what do they come up to you and say first?
Well, you know what? A lot of them may not know right away because they are in the younger generation. I played, it was, 10 years ago or so, almost 10 years ago when I first played at Syracuse. Yeah. So, a lot of these kids were younger and might not have known, but then when they, look up or whatever, the 6 OT game, they see that. And not to mention, I can still play. I get out there. I can still get out there. They can't beat me. For one-on-one, wherever it is, I can get out there and still do it, and they know that. So that right there kind of, gives
gets their attention.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. It's like another level of respect. They can relate to me. It's different when somebody's telling you to do something, but you can't do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But whereas if I'm telling you, and then I can go out there and show you, and then do it to you too, it's that level of respect, it's different right there. So I think I'm glad that I can still do that, and it helps me relate to them more and them to me.
True. Yeah. And I was actually curious. So like, do you and McNamara get out and play 2-on-2 against kids?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like usually, so we have managers, and usually it's against the managers because the guys, they got practice and. We're not gonna beat them up too much, but when we get together, we stick on the same team. We try not to go too hard against each other. But man, he can still fill it up. And then I just got done playing, so still love the game. But now it's just on something different. Being able to share my knowledge with these guys because I was in their situation, I was in their position. How they deal with coach when coach yells at them and gets on them. Just kind of try to share my experiences with them and how I dealt with things, and I think it's helped them throughout the year, and hopefully it can continue to do that.
So I mean, obviously you mentioned that you just got done playing. What kind of went into that decision? I mean, like you said, you probably could still be playing mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah.
So what at what point did you just decide to come back to coaching? Like, what kind of rolled into that whole decision?
Well, I knew I always wanted to stick with basketball, regardless of what it is. Coaching would be the second best thing to playing for me. And then, like I said earlier when we were talking, my family, I got 2 little girls, 8 and 6. So being overseas is a grind, man. That's, 7-8 months out of the year being without them. And especially at this time in their life, it's a pretty crucial time. Like, they're growing and they're doing a lot of things, super active. So for me to be able to be here and be with them, that just makes it that much better. So and when I had this opportunity open up that Coach Boeheim gave me, had to take it. Had to take it. It's basketball. It's at a high-level university. At Syracuse, so it was a no-brainer, so I could do that and be home with the fam.
Yeah, I mean, high level is an understatement. I mean, this is one of the premier programs in the country, but yeah. I'm curious, how much has your relationship changed with Boeheim, from player to coach? Are there ever moments where he's chewing a kid out and you're oh shit, I remember when that used to happen.
Absolutely, but I don't say anything. I just sit back and let him have it. And then when when he's done, and then he walks away, and I can be like, "It's all right, man.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it." Listen, he's gonna. If he didn't do it to you, then that's when you gotta start worrying.
Yeah,
for real. Because I think this generation nowadays, man, kids are a little bit more sensitive. You know, especially with everything going on, everybody, every move is being watched and they're putting out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to be careful. But, you know, to play for a coach like this, he's been doing it for 42 years. So you have to adapt to him. He doesn't have to adapt to you. His system's been working. You know what I mean? He's right. A Hall of Fame coach. So for you to come in and try to tell him, listen, you got to sit down and figure out how you're going to adapt to his system and go what he tells you to do. So I think that was, you know, this year for a lot of the guys, it was an adjustment to be able to do that. But, you know, that's why, you know, I'm here and, you know, Coach McNamara and all the other coaches to try to help them, you know, get through that process.
And on that point, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how, you know, Syracuse plays a 2-3, right? But it's not really as Peter called it, the AAU 2-3. So what makes it sort of difficult to adjust to, and what makes it different from, you know, just like us going to a rec league and playing 2-3 zone?
Well, I think, you know, he's been doing it forever, and it's always little tweaks, because, you know, if it's spots in the zone where if you get to it, then it's going to break down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it might just be as little as somebody having this guy move up a little bit in the back or move down or move over, whatever. It's just little tweaks that he sees every game and how that the opponent attacks it. Okay, now they're going to attack it this way. This is how I'm going to counter with that. So it's just about guys knowing the spots, and you got to be super active. If you're standing still, then it's not going to work at all. So a lot of times this year when we played bad defensively, we were stagnant and not moving. But when we're real good in the zone, we're super active and moving. And I think that's how we recruit too. Want to be long in the back, athletic, be able to cover space. And then up top, you want to have quick, active guards with quick hands. But, you know, if you listen to him and really pay attention, it's simple, because he's a simple dude. And I think the game of basketball is simple. It should be simplified. You know what I mean? A lot of guys try to get too complex with their sets and things like that. If you do, you know, things the right way and keep it simple, you know, and execute, you know, teams are going to have a hard time to stop you. They're going to have to adjust to what you do. So I think the simpler it is, the better.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned, like, improving defensively as the year has gone on. And, you know, I feel like Syracuse, you know, especially the last 2 years, last year was the Final Four?
Yep, last year.
All right, the years are blending together, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, like this year you guys finished strong down the stretch, going 7-4. You know, had a few road bumps at the beginning of the year, but, like, is that, you know, a product for the guys starting to get it, like starting to pick up on the defense and starting to just play well more or better together?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said earlier, we got four guys, you know, four starters this year who it's their first year in the system. Mm-hmm. You know, two grad transfers and then two freshmen are starting. And then, you know, the other guy, Tyler Lydon, he's been here 2 years. So Nobody's really been through the system and knows it in and out. They're still – Tyler Lydon, it was a freshman last year. He didn't have to do anything. He had Mike Benajay come penetrate and kick. Yeah. Now he has a whole different role. He has to be, you know, the man and be a little bit more aggressive, which, you know, at times, you know, some kids don't have that personality. You know what I mean? If you either have that dog in you or you don't, you know what I mean? And you can tell a kid, man, we need you to shoot 10, 15 times a game. It's not, you can tell him, but it's up to him to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think he's got more comfortable in that role. But again, it's tough, man, to come in the first year and right away, boom, boom, be able to, you know, pick it up like that. And so as the season's been rolling along, I think we're starting to gel a little bit more. You know, we only won two games on the road this year. We're not a super good road team, so I know, you know, the committee at NCAA would try to hold that against us maybe, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, playing in New York, this is like your home away from home.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So if we can get a couple games here, it would be great, man. It would be great. And then, you know, obviously we could stay in the city a little bit longer, right?
Yeah.
And enjoy that.
And yeah, I mean, I think back to, like, the teams when, like, you know, Johnny Flynn. Mm-hmm. You played with Johnny, right?
Johnny.
Paul Harris.
That was my area. Yeah.
And then, like, even a couple of years later with, like, Brandon Trish, mm-hmm. Waiters, Michael Carter-Williams, you know. All these guys were a little older, like, more experienced. So, I don't know. I feel like the best – or some of the best Cuse teams have always had depth and have been, you know, more experienced. Do you find that with this team, or are you guys still, like, a little raw?
Yeah, I mean, we're raw, but you see the talent is there, man. I look at the guy, Torian Thompson, you know, he's from the city. I forget, what do you go to St. Anthony's, I believe. But, he's a 6'10 freshman man, and he doesn't know what he's doing out there. But you see him, you'd be like, man, this dude is an NBA talent. Yeah. He'll get the ball, and then he'll just do something at 6'10, one dribble step back, be like, man, what are you doing? But it goes in, you know, it goes in. So when you got players like that who really just have it, you just kind of have to teach them the fundamentals of the system and you know, how to read, you know, situations and different game situations through the game. So we're raw, but, you know, I think we've gotten better as the year's gone on. And next year, I think, you know, with a lot of freshmen coming into their second year, we'll be even better.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could say that right now, and then we could lose a lot next year, you know what I mean? But from what we have right now, I think we could be in pretty good shape for the future.
Okay, so let's talk ACC tournament. I mean, first of all, I guess before we even get into this year's, is it weird, number one, being in the ACC tournament?
Money move, you know. it's a money move. Really football, you know. It was a football thing, but it is different for me because it's my first year on the coaching side, but I'm used to going to the Garden. Now we're going.
I was going to say, like, do you catch yourself, like, almost like going to the Garden this week?
Now we're going to Barclays in Brooklyn, so now we're staying in Brooklyn. I'm all backwards and everything, but no, man, it's cool. It's cool. You know, it's another thing that we can start now in the ACC. We started in the Big East, and now hopefully we can try to gain momentum in this conference. You know what I mean? So just new challenges and you know, again, having to adapt to something different. And, you know, that's what it's about. You know, got to adapt to change, right? So, absolutely. I think we'll be all right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys have Miami first.
Yep.
Give us sort of the scouting report on Miami.
Well, they got a good squad.
They did. Yeah. Super talented.
Really good coach too.
Man, the ACC is deep, man. It's a tough team. You got, you know, I don't know how many teams won 10 games. Like, but what, nine teams won 10 games, I believe. I think it was 9-10 teams.
Yeah.
And then you got, and you look at the road wins. I think North Carolina is the only team who has like 4 or 5 road wins. Everyone else is like 2, 3. Four road wins. So it's
Carolina was 7-5 on the road. Actually, Virginia was 7-5.
Oh, really? Yeah, they're tough, man. And then they're what? They're 7th seed or something, I think. Yeah. So, but yeah, man.
6. Yeah.
Yeah, but Miami, as far as Miami goes, you know, I know they got Newton, they got Brown, they got athletic big men. You know, they got that Australian kid coming in shooting the ball. So they're gonna try to penetrate the zone, get in there, and get in, get out to the shooters, and obviously use their athletic forwards and bigs to try to rebound the ball and be active on the defensive end. So we got our work cut out for us no matter who we play. We just got to go in there and do what we do good, be active on defense, and offensively we got a lot of talent. So I think if we execute, get in the lane, get paint touches, and get out to our shooters, I think we'll be all right. And then when we push the ball and get up and down in transition, we don't even have to run our offense. We got guys who can get up and down the floor, and if we can get – you know, easy buckets for they get down on the other end, I think that's, you know, that helps us a lot.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think when people think of ACC, they automatically think, you know, Duke, North Carolina. Starting with Duke, I mean, you know, they came into this year so hyped, you know, between the freshmen they had coming in, between Tatum, Giles, Frank Jackson, and then the guys they were bringing back with Emile Jefferson and Grayson Allen. You know, they hit a few speed bumps and had some problems with Coach K going out, but you know, I mean, how good are they, like, heading into March? Like, does anybody want to face this team?
Well, I mean, they're Duke, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how they played in the regular season. When it comes to this time of the year in college basketball, they're always going to be a force to be reckoned with, especially with Krzyzewski on the sideline. He's a mastermind. He's one of the greatest to ever do it.
You nailed that pronunciation, too.
Yeah. What's that?
You nailed that pronunciation, too. I would just say Coach K.
He said Krzyzewski better than you said pronunciation.
Yeah,
actually.
Facts.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, Luke Kennard, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's nasty,
he had a
dude.
Monster year, man.
He's unbelievable, man. He's pretty crafty, man. And he's not athletic, so when he has to do a lot of crafty things, and you get in that lane and – you know, he's hitting, you know, double pump shots and you know, off-balance layups. So he's good, man. And then obviously Grayson Allen, and they got the talented freshmen. So they're definitely going to be forced to be reckoned with. North Carolina, same thing. I mean, that, you know, when
Player
it's
of the year, Justin Jackson, right?
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He could be a draft pick. He could be a draft pick. Joe Barry is steady as ever at the one. And then they got the big guys down there and obviously Roy Williams on the sidelines. So
7th Woods, man.
Seventh Woods. Yeah. What's he doing? Is he doing anything?
He's coming off the bench. He plays for them, yeah.
He's played a little bit. I don't really see him too much, but.
Wait, but, so what's your official Grayson Allen take? You obviously have to be political being an assistant coach of another team, but.
I guess he's a competitive guy, man. I don't really, you know. I mean, I guess I don't know about the tripping and all that stuff. I don't know if he did it on purpose or not. I hope he wouldn't. But, I mean, you know, everybody gets frustrated sometimes. And I'm sure he did a couple of them on purpose. But he's a great talent, man. Yeah. So he's somebody you definitely got to worry about every game when you play. When we played him at home, he got in foul trouble, so it helped us out. But, he's a good player.
Yeah. And then what do you think of, like, a team like Florida State? You know, it's loaded.
Loaded.
Jonathan
super talented.
Isaac, yeah. Dwayne Bacon. Yeah. What's the quick scouting report on them?
Super talented. Those are two first round guys right there. And Isaac, he'll be a lottery pick for sure. Get it up and down the floor, active defensively. So long and big. They got, I don't know, their back line was like 6'10", 6'8", and then they got the big kid, Ocho.
Dude, that guy looks like he's 35 years
old,
like, man.
He's like 7'5", or something. Yeah. And his like thigh is bigger than my whole body. Yeah, they're another talented group, man. They ended up with the 2 seed, right? I believe. I think they're the 2
Not
seed.
Not positive, yeah.
But, they're something else.
Well, I think Louisville got the 2 seed.
Okay,
right?
Yep, yeah. Louisville.
Florida State is the 2 seed.
Are they? Yeah, okay.
I shouldn't be questioning someone who coaches them.
Sure either, but, man, they're good. We ended up – we beat them at home, man. We beat some tough teams at home, Duke, Florida State, Virginia. We got to figure out how to get it on the road, though, you know. But, Florida State, super talented. We just we got to be ready for everybody, you know. Yeah. We got to be ready for everybody. Every game is going to be a good one.
So, all right. So, I mean, kind of looking around at the rest of college basketball, you know, we could do ACC stuff for an hour here. Mm-hmm. But I know we want to get kind of your thoughts on sort of the more general landscape of college ball this year. Mm-hmm. Who are some of the players or teams that have sort of caught your eye, or you find yourself, you know, when you're not doing Syracuse stuff, you find yourself sort of paying attention to, or maybe late at night, like watching their games? Like, who are some of the other, you know, storylines across college basketball you've been kind of interested in this year?
Well, obviously, I've been watching UCLA. Yep. Alonzo Ball, man, he's something else, man. I watched the game the other night where he broke the, I think it was the all-time conference assist record. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason Kidd. So he's something else. Arizona's good. I've been watching them. Villanova, Gonzaga. You know, I think those teams are the four teams that I've really been paying attention to outside of the ACC. So I've really been trying to pay attention to those teams. And then when we get to the NCAA tournament, you know, we'll figure out who we go against and then try to figure out the competition. But those four teams, and especially UCLA, man, Lonzo Ball, he's pretty special to watch. I really like watching him. I enjoy watching him play.
You think he'll be the number one pick or what? Or should be?
I think he should be.
Yeah.
I think he should be the number one pick. I haven't seen Markelle Fultz play too much, but I know they're not too good of a team, so I don't really know.
They had a really bad year.
Yeah, but what is he averaging, like 23?
I mean, he put up some of those ridiculous numbers I've ever seen in college, yeah.
But now I'm hearing that since they won't make the tournament, then that's going to drop him from the number one pick.
Yeah, we were actually talking about that, like, because Simmons didn't make it last year with LSU.
Right,
so,
right.
Like, our NBA team's really going to, like, start a new trend of taking kids who don't make the tournament 2 years in a row.
Simmons, 6'10".
True.
Fultz is not even – I don't even think he's a one. Well, he plays the one, but can he play the one in the league? He's 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah.
Well, you've seen Dennis Smith Jr. up close.
Right.
That's a team that's probably not going to make the tournament either. How would you kind of rate him against the rest of those guys we just mentioned?
Man, he's right up there. He's a top five pick. He had a triple double against us when we played, and he did it like you were like, man, he had a triple double. It was like
like a quiet triple double.
Yeah,
somehow.
A quiet. How can you do that, right?
Yeah.
But he's talented. Super 6'4". He's bigger than I thought. Long arms. He kind of reminds me of almost like a more athletic Chris Paul, I guess, a little bit.
That's a pretty good scouting report,
I want to, you know, he's a great player. I'm not saying, obviously, you know, right away, but maybe where he could go. A little bit more athletic, and I think he has to work on his jump shot to be more consistent.
Let me ask you, though, like, kind of related to that question, do you, you know, Ben Simmons, Fultz, even Dennis Smith, like, do you think even over the past 10 years from sort of your college basketball era to now, do you think the kids like care less about the tournament itself? Like, is it more kind of about just being college as being a stepping stone to the league, or am I misreading that?
No, I don't think you're misreading that. I think that's that, you know, in some ways that's correct, you know. I mean, a lot of the kids are just, and rightfully so, you know what I mean? That's what they've been working for their whole life,
for
right?
Sure.
And we talked about it earlier, you know, a lot of kids come from tough situations, so if they're able to come and make millions of dollars like that, then, I mean, you know, more power to you. I can't – who's going to tell a kid to you know, not do that when they're growing up struggling?
Nah.
But on the other side of things, you want to – that's what it's about, college basketball, right? It's about getting to the NCAA tournament. It's about the love of the game. We don't – you know, they don't get paid, you know, so it's all for the love of the game. And that's what people want to see at the end of the season. They want to see a competitive NCAA tournament. And when you got guys leaving early, it can take a lot of the juice, so to speak, out of the tournament with, you know, most talented guys leaving early. But that's just the way it is, man. That's just how it is now. You know, it's an AAU market, and, you know, kids are freshmen in high school, you know, already, you know, doing their announcements on ESPN and things like that or whatever, tweeting. But, you know, hopefully the kids will just, you know, try to stay at it. And you know what? It's the circles too, man. The people that are around them, it's huge, man.
Yeah.
And you want to see them, you know, push them in the right direction. So, you know, hopefully we can, you know, have a good tournament this year and keep it rolling.
Yeah. And you mentioned AAU ball. You know, there's been a growing number of people who are kind of saying that, you know, AAU is killing, mm-hmm. killing pro basketball. You know, Kevin Garnett came out and said it on TNT pretty recently. But, you know, you're a product of the AAU system. You know, what's your take on that? Do you think, like, it's bad for the game these days? Or, you know, do you think it's something necessary?
Well, I mean, I think it's always good and bad and everything, right? I mean, you could find guys who have AAU programs who are really benefiting the kids and really, you know, teaching them outside of basketball, too, what it's like to succeed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, you got guys who are just, I'm trying to get a job, you know, I'll send you here, we'll give you a job, or you get this money for this kid. So that's really messing up the game, because they're not trying to help the kid, they're just thinking about themselves. I mean, and you deal with that every day in recruiting, you know what I mean? And it's super tough, man, because they don't have the kid's best interest. So
yeah.
So in that way, it's definitely hurting them. But I know there is people out there who really, you know, have the best interest in the kids and are trying to, you know, help them and use that AAU as a stepping stone to get to the, you know, college and then to the NBA. But I think overall the whole feel of the AAU is that it is kind of messing up the purity of the game. You know what I mean? You want to be able to teach the kids the fundamentals and the right way to play, and then instead of just throwing them out there and be like, go ahead, try to dunk as hard as you can and shoot a lot of threes, or
mm-hmm. yeah.
or you know, it's entertainment, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling on it is, like, for all the people who say, you know, whether it be media or former players saying that, like, AAU is bad for the game, like, how many of those guys are actually, like, hitting AAU tournaments, though? You know what I mean? Like, Abe and I, you know, we're not at every single summer tournament, but, like, we hit a handful of games over the summer, and, like, you find the right game, like, those kids are going hard at each other.
Absolutely.
And they're playing hard. So it's not, like, as you said, like, there's good and bad. Like, so there's, like, an uneasy medium, I guess, where there are good AAU coaches and good programs, but, you know, as usual, like, this shit rises to the top in these situations. So
right, and again, like, you know what? It's just a lot of the times negative stuff, it makes the best news, I guess.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean. And then so they're not looking at the feel good stories in the AAU program. Like, this guy started an AAU program from nothing with no money. Everything was free. They had, you know, writing the markers on their jerseys, things like that. You know what I mean? You don't hear those stories a lot. So and it is a lot of that out there too. Like you said, just going there and watching those tournaments, there's high-level kids out there, man, playing. So the AAU definitely gets your name out there. It helped me.
Yeah.
You know, when I remember when I was in ninth grade, I played for the Hurricanes in my first tournament. I think we went to Houston, and then I played well, and boom, right then and there, you know, I had that many more colleges looking at me. So it definitely can benefit you, for sure, because you want to be able to show people that you compete with, you know, people across the country at a high level. So in that case, it definitely helps. So yeah, like you said, good and bad. Yeah.
You know, obviously, just thinking about the way that you can kind of have perspective on that now and have a step back and look at that. And I know that, you know, we know from talking to you before and your Twitter account and stuff that you're also always paying attention to politics and, you know, paying attention to injustices. And was that like something that was always sort of in your mind and that you know, even as a kid in AAU and stuff, you were paying attention to? Or was there a certain point in your life where that sort of like the light clicked on and you started paying attention to all that type of stuff across the board?
Probably, you know what, it's funny, man. I was just talking to my guy about this last night. It was probably like 3 years ago when I came back to finish school, or about 2.5-3 years ago. You know, there was this lady, I took this class. It was a meditation class. So, and it probably, it can sound corny, like meditation change, but it really...
Oh, that sounds fire.
Yeah, like I'm big into like Buddhism. I read a lot of books like that, and just stuff about like self-awareness and being conscious of yourself, what you eat and stuff like that. And then like when I started doing that, reading more, taking those classes, it just was like, I started being aware of everything more, you know what I mean? So like when I'm eating, now I'm paying attention to what's going on, because so many people are distracted by so many things that like you don't even know what's going on, like what's good and bad, what's going on. You hear stuff, if you pay attention, you'd be like, man, how is this even happening? Like how does a city 20 minutes away from where I grew up, Flint, Michigan, have no clean water? You know what I mean?
Years on end.
Well, it's been like 3 years. Yeah. Like we did a charity game out there, and you know, we raised like $10,000, but that doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? It just gives you more bottled water, which, where are you going to put all the plastic bottles?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So once we do good, it's always something else to kind of like that you have to deal with. And just being, man, it's just about being self-aware and about what's going on out here, man, because it's crazy, man. It's pretty crazy. So I think me just reading and being conscious about you know, myself and what's going on, it helped me to see what's the real, you know, the truth, you know, because it's so much fake out here. It's so much alternative facts, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the book you're reading was The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, right?
Oh, man, unbelievable book. Yeah. It's simple, too. It's nothing like you would think, be like, it's real in-depth, but it's simple, man. You can really wrap your head around it and get into the book. And, yeah. And I did. I read it in like 3 days. So
can you give us like a fourth grade style book report on it?
Fourth grade style book report. Well, it's a fable about a wealthy one of the best lawyers ever in the world, and how that he basically had all the money in the world, but he was unhappy because his life was so imbalanced. You know what I mean? He had his family, never saw his family because he's working all day. So that's really the gist of it. You want to be able to balance your life between work and family and everything else. You need your peace of mind too, right? Because if you were in the office all day, New York City, every day doing the same thing, man, that'll get to you. That'll stress you, man. So sometimes you just got to go to that corner of the room and take a couple deep breaths and just be grateful for everything that, you know, that's going on.
So speaking of balance, right?
Yeah.
I think you're a perfect person to ask this question based on that. Like, So sometimes, for example, we'll be in the office, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a press conference going on with our current president or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating to watch, or we'll get down or be, you know, be like, what the hell is this? Meanwhile, then we got to click right back and type something about basketball, which feels very meaningless, you know, coming from one thing.
Yeah.
Pretty big fucking deal, and then go to like posting sneakers online. So how do you kind of balance, like, all right, you know, basketball is the game we love, and what, you know, what has the three of us in this room and is, you know, brought all of us to this point in life, but also, you know, there's these other potentially terrible political things going on. Like, how do you kind of find that balance in yourself and your daily life and how you interact with people?
Well, you can only do so much too, right? You can only, I mean, you to help others, is that's like the ultimate success for me. Like all the stuff that I've been reading and trying to research, you know, so many people are just have their priorities messed up. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you can't take anything with you. You know what I mean? What can you take with you? How did you treat others? How did people treat you? You know what I mean? So to be able to give to others, and it comes in various ways, right? Like right now, you guys up here are giving to others. You're giving guys and people news about basketball around the world, and that makes people feel good because it's something that people enjoy reading and doing. But for me, it might be, you know, helping this kid learn how to do an in and out cross or whatever, step back, so for me, I helped him, and that's what it's about, man. It's so many people being selfish and instead of selfless, you know what I mean? And And if you were talking to me 3-4 years ago, it'd have been a whole different type of conversation. You know what I mean? But that's what life is about, growth and change. Because if you don't change, then you're gonna stay stuck, and you're not gonna get to where you want to be. So, you know, for me, it's just about continuing to grow and learn and then share it with people. You know, share it with people, and if they get it, they get it. If they don't, you know, that's on them. You know, I really can't stress about that either. I think a lot of the times back then I worried about what people would say and what they would think. Now it's kind of just like, well, I'm running my own race, so, you know, it is what it is. If you're not going to get on, then, you know, whatever.
So is this something you try and, you know, pass down to the kids when you're coaching? Like, because I know, like, when I was in college, I wasn't trying to hear any of that shit.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. I was worried. Me neither. Well, I mean, yeah, you try to, but you kind of do it in different ways because everybody might not understand, like, man, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
Like, getting real, you know. Deep on me and all that, but it's just kind of like you just want to make sure they're aware of what they're doing and how they're going about things, especially, yeah, like I said, again, man, because social media is out there, so you want to, whatever you put out there is going to get out there quick, just like that. So just to try to carry yourself as a good human being, man, because like you said, look at our president, man, that's unbelievable. Like, it doesn't even make sense, man. You can't even, like, what's going on? Yeah. Like, I don't even know how to, where do we start to talk about it? Like,
how did we get here?
Yeah, right. It's confusing, man. It's like the world is doing a complete flip.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're only one person, and you can only, you know, do what you do. Everybody else is going to do what they do. Hopefully you can just try to pass some of that good positive vibes on. Yeah, that's it. Just do the right thing.
Yeah.
All right, well, on a lighter note,
right.
Maybe to wrap things up. Well,
perhaps heavier, depending
on. Yeah, sorry about that. Heavier.
No, I love it, man. I love it.
I mean, there's definitely two things we want to ask you about. I guess the first would be, is the Earth flat?
Is the Earth flat?
Man, I mean, this has been a hot topic, and I guarantee you this happened when we heard him say that. We looked at each other like, we got to ask Eric for your thoughts, because I feel like you're deep in the, like, game.
I got a deeper question. Is there people living inside the Earth's core?
Oh, my God.
That's big right there, because I've read about that there's civilizations inside the Earth.
Wait, what do you mean?
What?
Inside. I was just reading a book article the other day about they're saying civilizations inside the Earth. Inside the core of the Earth.
What, like, controlling?
I don't know if it's controlling, but they're...
How did they get there?
I have no clue. I have no clue. I have to do a little bit more research about that. But it's something to... Why would we just, like, have, like, be closed-minded to things? Like, why not be opened up to... Like, wow. It could be a possibility, right? Like, who knows?
Absolutely.
Like, I believe in aliens and all that. Like, it could be...
This is exactly why I wanted to ask you this question.
Look, I mean, look.
That was not expecting that answer.
Based on what has happened and just, like, I mean, especially in America in the past, you know, 8 to 12 months, but also worldwide, like, I'm open to believing anything at this point.
Man, there's shit going on that we have no clue about and the government's doing right now. Like, okay, we're going to put this out there, because that'll distract them for a while, and then we're going to do this and... They're not gonna know anything about it, man. I just read something where they're passing bills and they're not even telling us about it. You know what I mean? They're not even.
There's no anything.
Yeah. So what's going? I mean, we don't know what's going on. We're just out here.
True.
So that's, man. Get your knowledge up, basically. Try to figure out what's going on, because it's a lot going on, man.
Was there anything, in sort of the same vein as, like, the flat earth thing, is there anything in the past couple months that you've come across that you really found profoundly interesting as far as, you know, different stuff like that?
Man, it's a lot of stuff. I can't remember. But we have this psychologist who comes for the team, mm-hmm. and he's a man, just a real – his head is so big. I'm talking about – and, you know, you'd be like, man, you got the biggest head, but you are so smart, so I understand why your head is so big. But, like, he'll talk to me about, like, parallel realities and parallel universes. So, like, boom, like, are we, like, right now what we're living in, is it real? Like, it's so crazy to have your mind going, doing flips. But, like, it's, because, like, you know, we only use 20% of our brain,
right,
or whatever. So he was saying, like, what is the other 80%? Like, how could we use that? We could, who knows, man? Like, it's pretty crazy. So it's like a lifelong thing to try to figure it out.
Yeah.
Like try to figure out your purpose while you're here.
Right.
Like and I figured it out. Like the purpose, it's to help and give to others. Because like I said, at the end of the day, that's the most success that you can have is trying to help somebody and make somebody else feel good. Like when you do something for somebody else and they feel good about it, you feel good, right?
Absolutely.
Like automatically. That's Absolutely. What I'm saying. Like better than like when you go buy yourself a new pair of shoes and be like, man, damn, I'm gonna look good in these. Like you feel right. good, but. It and then it goes away.
But then you're just waiting for people to compliment you.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. So, like, when you do something for somebody else, that lasts a lot longer. So that's the whole goal is to keep on trying to do that as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just pointing out simply that, like, when they announce, like, the new planets they found or whatever, always think of Eric yeah. Evendorf now.
Well, we got like 11 or something, right?
So I was looking up the Phantom Time Hypothesis. It's actually not the year 2017.
Did you send that?
I sent that to you.
And
like,
I definitely, I looked at it. You know I did.
I love, dude, I used to be like, I mean, I still venture into like conspiracy theories every yeah. now and then. But for a minute, I was like all the way in, like late nights in college. Just like,
it's crazy, right?
A little out there. And then, you know, reading up on like the JFK conspiracies and stuff, man. Like
CIA yeah. and stuff, man. How they, man. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, we might need to do another hour on this. At a different point in time.
We do definitely. We gotta do that because we'll be back. I'll be back down here. Whether I don't know when, but we're gonna do that.
Well, if you guys make the East Regional, you might be back here for at the Garden,
right?
For
yeah.
the Sweet 16.
Let's plan on that.
Word. So, very last question. Remy Ma or Nicki Minaj?
Remy Ma, come yeah. on, she got bars. Nicki's like she's. I mean, don't get me wrong, she can go too. But Remy's writing her own stuff.
Yeah,
she's man, she's street. Like she's like, that's what she does. You can tell, right? Nicki's yeah. kind of more like commercial with it, I guess, right? So
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, we got to bring this back, Abe. What happened? We had Jadakiss up here.
That's my man.
Yeah, I knew it.
That's my man. That's my guy. He came to the Q's for. For Midnight Madness.
Yeah, so there's like a 6 degrees of separation with every single guest we've had up. They like have at least one decent to good Jadakiss story. So like, do you have any either seeing him on campus when you're a student or
man,
like,
I was
that you could say?
Well, he's a huge Syracuse fan.
Yeah. Huge. Messing with Jada since I was at the Cuse. Like yeah. I remember, so one of my good friends who I grew up with, Wilson Chandler.
Oh,
yeah, it's one of my good friends.
Pete's one of the biggest Wilson Chandler fans.
It's my guy. We grew up playing AAU together.
He had his career high last night. He had I think he had 36.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was just talking to him last night. I was just talking
to him. But he's big into conspiracy theories and stuff, too.
I'm telling you, listen.
It's all making sense.
It's like basketball.
He's a vegan.
Yeah.
You know, he's a vegan.
Yeah, we did a story on him, with him about that over the summer.
I'm telling you, he changed his whole way. He really did. And I don't know if you talked to Chris Doug before Chris Douglas Roberts.
But they're boys too, right? Yeah.
He's into it. Like, he's heavy. Like, you'll read his Twitter. You'll be like, go follow him if you're not on Twitter. He's unbelievable with it. Like, he's like, I'm thinking like, dang, I got to really get my stuff up to par with messing with him. But yeah, man, it's
Wait, so that Jadakiss. Jadakiss.
Yeah, Jada. I was going to say, where were we at? Damn, where the fuck are we
going? See, this is why, because every time you say something about Jadakiss, we could go in so many different directions.
No, Jada, so... The first story I had, I was with Wilson, and I was with this one he played for the Knicks. Nate Robinson had like a little charity game or whatever outside in Yonkers, right, with Jada and them. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I just remember we were on the block with Jada and like in his neighborhood, and I felt like I was in the Paid in Full movie. That's how much it was. It was like three. Remember in the Paid in Full where they're doing outside the store, like all that. That's how I felt. That's how I felt outside of the store. Like I'm like, man, what's going on out here? Police riding by, like doing nothing, just riding by.
Yeah.
And just like they'll beat, like, huh? And then Jada, and then we're just kicking it with Jada, and then I'm like, man, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because he's a legend. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So and then I've seen him, I had my boy in Q's brought him up a couple times to do some stuff, and then, you know, we came up to Midnight Madness and all that. So he's Orange family for sure.
You'll probably see him this week at Barclays.
I would think so.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Actually, they're on tour, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, true. He's become pretty tight with Sean Kilpatrick too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both friends of the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, they're right. Actually. He's right there. He's from Yonkers area, right?
Yeah.
So.
All All right, well, Eric, thank you so much for taking some time, man. This was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, man.
Might have to make it a once-a-year thing, hopefully.
We're going to have to, man, because we got a lot of conspiracy theories.
We're just scratching the skirt.
Once we get the full podcast network off the ground, you can just host one about that.
That'd be cool. We'll get Wilson and Chris Doug up here, and then we'll really get into it.
Oh, my God, done. But, yeah, best of luck in the tournament. Say what up to Boeheim for us.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, for sure, man.